Today's program is brought to you by Whole Foods Market, a dynamic leader in the quality food business, a mission-driven company that aims to set the standards of excellence for food retailers. For more information, visit wholefoodsmarket.com.
This is Mike Edison, host of Art Senses a Seizure, as you're listening to the Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, please visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
And welcome to Taste Talks on Heritage Radio. I'm your host, Sarah Zorn, the food editor at Northside Media, which produces the annual Taste Talks Festival in both Brooklyn and Chicago each fall. Picking up where the festival left off, the Taste Talks podcast brings innovators from various fields, including music, art, media, design, and tech, together with luminaries from the food and restaurant world to expound on any and all topics related to taste. On today's very, very special episode, we will be airing an interview that I had the distinct honor of recording at Le Bernardin with none other than my food idol and yours, the incomparable Eric Repair, along with his longtime wine director and now business partner, the incredible Aldo Sohm. And inspired by Le Bernardin's recent, not at all surprising inclusion yet again in the world's 50 best restaurants list, we'll be chatting about some other top-ranked establishments throughout the country and beyond that have made our own personal dining bucket lists. But first, I'll be joined in the studio by friend of the show, Nell Casey, the talented food editor at Gothamist, to talk about a restaurant trend that's sweeping New York City right now and that just so happens to be entirely topical considering today's guests. Hello there, Nell.
Hello again, Sarah.
So I'm speaking, of course, about New York's very own French Revolution Indeed. Of sorts, with at least 10 or so newish restaurants that I could think of off the top of my head that are going full bore with the traditional French brasserie bit. They're dusting off old war horses like Lobster Thermidor, of all things, and Frog's Legs, and forgoing modernist touches in favor of really super faithful renditions of escargot, duck à l'orange, and more.
All the good stuff.
So what is up with this? French food obviously underlines most cuisines.
You'll Bedrock.
Find,
Absolutely.
You know, most chefs have a seriously French tool belt bag of tricks, mm-hmm. but I feel like it's very recently that you're seeing really upfront presentations of escargot and fricassees and,
totally.
And frog's legs.
And really in the past year, there have been, like you mentioned, so many different restaurants that have opened in New York City that are really taking it back to the roots, which I think is great because more steak frites in my mouth is always a good thing.
Well, hopefully, you know, our show previous to this one, we had on Daniel Eddy of Rebel, and he's definitely part of this trend.
Absolutely.
You know, he had a little bit of insight on it. But yeah, you're seeing like Le District, which people are billing as the French version of Eatery, mm-hmm. which in addition to its own store of restaurants, basically is just like a market chock-a-block of every French food stuff you could possibly
it's
want.
It's crazy. It's huge. It literally has everything. I think they sort of modeled it after, okay, well, I'm walking through a section of Paris. What am I going to see? I'm going to see a restaurant. I'm going to see a boulangerie. I'm going to see a pâtisserie. I'm going to see all these different things. And it is pretty wild. I mean, I don't know how one would eat everything in one sitting, but that's probably not the point. I'm just a glutton, so
if I lived any closer, I would be that person carrying a baguette under my arm
totally.
On my way to the subway. But yeah, Keith McNally got in the game early on.
Oh, I love Cherche Midi, yeah.
It has an incredible burger, amongst other things.
Well, it's great. I mean, the Bowery in general is just blowing up with
like
sort
Rebelle
of French bistros. Exactly, like mm-hmm. Rebelle, like Cherche Midi, La Gamelle, Motorino, Matthew Palombino's new restaurant. So
yes.
It's funny that, you know, this neighborhood, the Bowery is changing so much. And it's interesting that the changes that are happening are sort of less like, I don't know, not like the modern kind of things that we're seeing coming into different neighborhoods that are gentrifying, but like these really sort of like old world
well, exactly.
style restaurants.
The one that really blows my mind is L'Antagoniste,
mm-hmm.
which is in
Bed-Stuy, yeah.
Brooklyn. It is a cross of all things from a Crown Fried Chicken, and they're serving poulet roti across from the Crown Fried Chicken. It's a good $28 a plate, and they are unapologetic about it. So much so that the menu is basically in French.
In French, I know,
in
no
French.
English.
It's ballsy. Balls
I dig
to the
it,
wall.
My why not? If you're going to go there, go all the way.
Well, we are going to take a quick break. So go grab yourself a croissant, a cafe au lait, and then come back for our interview with Eric Repair and Aldo Sohm. You are listening to Taste Talks on the Heritage Radio Network. So I think that we might just have to pull the plug on Taste Talks after this and go out on a high note, because honestly, once you've had the opportunity to talk to Eric Repair, what else is there really? Not like he needs much in the way of introduction, but needless to say, Eric Repair is the Michelin-starred James Beard Award-winning chef and co-owner of New York City's Le Bernardin, which is the only restaurant in New York to maintain a 4-star rating for more than 20 years, and was also just honored yet again as one of the world's 50 best restaurants. He's also a best-selling cookbook author and the host of his own Emmy Award-winning PBS TV series titled Evek Eric, which recently returned for its third exciting season. But for today's episode of Taste Talks, we couldn't team Eric up with just anybody, which is why we double down with another food world superstar who just so happens to be an Eric Repair protege, Aldo Sohm. Together, he and Eric opened Aldo Sohm Wine Bar in Manhattan this last September, and he's also the longtime wine director of Le Bernardin, which, because of him, won a James Beard Award for Outstanding Wine Service in 2009. Aldo has also been on the receiving end of numerous prestigious awards and titles himself, such as being named the World Sommelier Association's Best Sommelier in America in 2007, and Best Sommelier in the World in 2008. My goodness, thank you guys for sitting down with me today in Le Bernardin. Nice digs you got. Well, maybe not down here in the conference room, but certainly upstairs. Thanks so much for sitting down.
Thank you for having us. We're so happy.
Oh, I certainly feel lucky. So in an article for the Wall Street Journal, you guys were referred to as the odd couple of food and wine.
Are we?
Yeah. Well, you tell me, would you agree with that assessment? The odd couple of food and wine?
He's definitely odd. Me, I don't know.
All goes odd. Is that what we're in for?
Just read the article.
We will refer them back to the article.
It's pretty self-explanatory.
Eric, you seem to inspire such a great amount of loyalty in everybody that works from you, leading, of course, to some really significant partnerships, Aldo being chief amongst them. So, well, Aldo, what would you say it is about Eric as a leader, as a mentor, that really lifts and inspires the people that work with him?
I think it's about himself. He's very consistent. I think that's very impressive. I think every person has struggles, especially working in this industry, maintaining consistent. Because, look, in the morning we get up, we might have an argument with the girlfriend or with the wife, or I don't feel very well. That's all irrelevant when it comes to work. You have to perform every day 100%. And he's very, very good at that. That's number one. Number two is also, look, what I see, and it shows, look, all of his chefs, all of his core people, they stay with him for a very, very long time. That is very, very rare in this industry.
Yes.
So it's very important for him that he stays that. And it's very smart from him because, like that, he keeps a consistency. And I think he's very, very fair on top of it. And, you know, I think everybody loves to work here because we can strive for the best. And he gives us also the setup. Inclusive his partner, Maggie Lacoste, right? I mean, they have to build the platform, otherwise you cannot perform.
With the wine bar, Aldo went from being your protege to your partner. So what was it, on the other hand, about Aldo that made you want to take the next big step in your relationship?
I'm not sure that Aldo was our protege. Aldo came on board at Le Bernardin to take care of the wine, obviously, since it's his expertise. And he was already full of accolades, including the world champion sommelier, which is a big deal.
I won it under Le Bernardin.
Yeah, it's what I said. Yeah. It's a very big deal. If not, I wouldn't say it. But when you have someone like Aldo who's so talented, who has created a relationship with the clientele, who's has mentored a team of sommeliers who are very excited to work with him, who is part of
Le Bernardin family.
We really want to do something for Aldo. And we thought to take the space across the passage from Le Bernardin, which used to be a very iconic bar in the 90s called Palio, and to transform it into an Aldo Somme wine bar would be a great idea for a couple of reasons. For Aldo to have fun and in a more casual way, although he still have to take care of Le Bernardin as a priority to be at Le Bernardin, but it's a fun project. At the same time, it's also a business, and it's creating some incentives for Aldo to be with us. And the idea is to keep Aldo with us for the next 50 years.
Have you signed up for that, Aldo? You should see his face right now. I know we're on the radio, but there was quite a smirk from the corner. Maybe this is why you were referred to as the odd couple, but Eric, I've heard that you have been known to pair everything with Bordeaux. If you had your druthers, everything would be paired with Bordeaux, from seafood to salad. So what is it about Bordeaux, and Aldo, does that drive you absolutely crazy?
I'm answering first.
Yes.
It's true, I love Bordeaux. I grew up near the region, and even as a young child, you know, in France, you're allowed to drink a little bit of wine, which I was doing. And I started to appreciate Bordeaux wines, and my palate really enjoyed those kind of wines. And if I eat oysters or a red snapper or meat or mushroom or zucchini, a green salad, cheese, strawberries, I drink Bordeaux with everything, and I love it. And I know it doesn't make sense, and I'm very often seen as the antichrist of the sommelier team of Le Bernardin. And obviously Aldo has an incredible talent, and he will do a wine pairing that makes sense and so on. But at the end of the day, what makes you happy is what you should be doing. And I love my Bordeaux. Now, when Aldo does a wine pairing, I appreciate his knowledge and work. And I also appreciate the pairing with the food. And I'm much more open-minded than I may sound. When I go to restaurants or when I go to certain regions, I like to try the wine. But it is true that I'm a Bordeaux fan.
Well, that makes me feel a little all right about my palate, that you are tied to your Bordeaux, because as much as I understand about food, I'm the first to admit I know very little about wine. And as accomplished as you are, and how as incredible as Le Bernardin's personal wine cellar is, as well as Aldo Somme's wine bar, I know that you are about taking the pretension out of wine. So how should somebody like me, a layman who doesn't really know much, how do I take advantage of my sommelier at a restaurant without coming across as a dimwit?
I mean, see, that's always the sad component, that wine, of course, is very quickly intimidating. And tell you the truth, I feel that still after 20 years doing that.
Oh, now I feel really good. Okay, good.
It's an immensely quickly changing topic. Look, wine was never as connected into life and tied into lifestyle as it is today. Look how many young people are curious and explore and try new things and breaking out of all kind of the traditional areas. There's a lot of things happening right now, and that's good. And young people read also. And look, to me, I'll give you a good example. When I go out very often, I don't want to look into a wine list. I want to be with my girlfriend, right, and talk about it. So listen, I ask, what can you recommend me? You know the cuisine. I'd like to have something. This is the price parameters I have. And I look for something crisp, fresh, or something more full-bodied. And, you know, you'd be surprised. And you know what? I don't know everything. And like this, I can also learn something new.
And you obviously break a lot of, I guess, the imagined rules with wine and food pairings, because you work at a very seafood-focused restaurant, and a lot of people's minds, it's white wine and seafood across the board. So how do you take advantage of your store of knowledge and your creativity to push the boundaries with Le Bernardin's menu?
You know, the problem with that is rules. You know, those are certain guidelines which we learn. You know, white wine goes with white meat and goes with fish. Red wine goes with dark meat. You go to Italy and, you know, you order a grilled chicken breast with a little tomato sauce and they will serve you red wine with it. That rule is already gone and it tastes delicious. If you go to Austria and order one of these Tafelspitz with the broth of it, they serve you white wine and it's fantastic. That rule is a little a guideline for somebody who, listen, I don't know much about wine. It gives me a little idea because it's a very complex topic. But you can look. And working in a restaurant, look, we have, of course, many wines open, so you can always play around with, you know, it works or doesn't work, like that. So like that, I explore. And I like to push the envelope, you know. You don't come to Le Bernardin and get with your lobster your California Chardonnay, because you can get that everywhere. We like to push the envelope and, you know, but
so
still
you,
serve you.
You serve Bordeaux?
got him in a corner.
You know, there's this beautiful episode, you know, perfect pairing, which we did. And when we created that, it was also Bordeaux goes with everything. You should watch that. It's okay. Still on YouTube. It's actually phenomenal.
I'm going to look for it.
There was not so long ago a Wine Spectator article which actually pulled that topic up again.
Well, do you ever try to throw him curveballs with your menu?
Every minute.
Well, I don't try, but it happens very often because when we create the menu as chefs, we don't necessarily care about the sommelier. We care about creating a beautiful dish that pays homage to the fish. And then we invite Aldo in a tasting, actually in this room, our conference room, and we test the dish, and Aldo find a way to pair wine with that dish. But I never create a dish for a wine. The wine has to complete the dish.
Sure.
And I think it's very important for a chef not to be boxed in a category of, like, because we want to serve red wine, you have to do a dish like this, like that. Yeah, the dish has to come out of your soul, has to come out of your experience that you had and your inspiration, obviously, and so on. So never I think about the wine when I create a dish. But then, of course, I think about the wine immediately. I call Aldo, and we actually have a back and forth and discuss some of his ideas and taste. And at the end, Aldo decide what goes best with the wine. But it's the way we work. The sommelier do not dictate the menu. It's the chefs who create the menu, and the sommelier come and basically complete the experience.
So it may not be quite accurate to call Aldo your protege, but I would imagine that he would consider you a mentor. Who were some of the real mentors in your life, Eric, that have pushed you and formed you and made you who you are?
I was lucky to have few mentors in my life, few important mentors. I had many teachers. A mentor is a little bit more than a teacher. And I have to say, Joël Robuchon in Paris taught me I was very young. I was 18 years old in his kitchen, and then I stayed there until 23. But he taught me rigor, discipline, technique, cleanliness, passion for exceptional food. He taught me all that. So I came out of Robuchon very, very obsessed almost and excited about cooking. Then I discovered Jean-Louis Paladin in Washington, D.C. It was my first job in the U.S. And Jean-Louis Paladin, compared to Robuchon, is basically comparing Catholic school and Woodstock. Very different styles. But Jean-Louis really opened my mind and he said, look, you're a good technician, but you really are not creative. You just duplicate. And if you want to be a great chef, you really have to be creative. And Jean-Louis taught me how to become creative, how to take risks, how not to be afraid of failure, during the process of creating. Then you have, when you serve the client, you cannot be inconsistent. Obviously, it's before. So I got that of Jean-Louis Paladin kitchen with the background of Robuchon and obviously creativity coming from him. And at Le Bernardin, Gilbert Lecause, who was the chef at the time, gave me his kitchen and said, look, you have the freedom to manage my kitchen, understand Le Bernardin, create dishes that you wish, again, respecting the philosophy of Le Bernardin. And he taught me how to be a leader in a kitchen and in a restaurant, someone who inspired the team to go further, to do the extra mile, to want to be better every day. And in between the creative engine that we have here, the discipline, the rigor that comes from, again, my mentors, and myself being able to manage a team, Le Bernardin is where he is today.
You're also a longtime Buddhist, which I would imagine contributes in a certain way to your famously Zen approach in the kitchen. So what is your response to so many kitchens today that are kind of run like mini fascist regimes?
Yes. Well, they are wrong. I can say it because I've been there. When I was a young chef, I used to have tantrums in the kitchen. I used to yell in the kitchen, curse in the kitchen, break plates when the food was bad, terrorize the staff in many ways. And I was very unhappy in my life. And I always say, you cannot mix happiness and anger at the same time. You either were angry or happy, but it doesn't go in the mind at the same time. I was miserable, the staff was leaving, the best employees were leaving, everybody was miserable, the food was not as good as it should be, and I sat down at home and I started to reflect on the situation. At the same time, I was discovering Buddhism, and it's a very powerful influence in my life that I don't necessarily discuss at work. But I apply the principles of Buddhism without saying where it's coming from. But kindness, tolerance are universal qualities that are appreciated by the team. And from being a very disrespectful chef toward the team of the dining room and toward the kitchen team, I became someone who wants to inspire and make people be excellent at what they do and at the same time be inspired by their work and not be afraid. Because a cook who's shaking like that or who's scared of his chef cannot give the best. And I strongly believe that when you cook, if you're angry, you can potentially put the anger into the food. Or if you are a happy cook, you can put that passion into your food. And obviously, it's no scientific proof of that, but I know that the food tastes better when the cooks are happy than when they're not happy.
I'd also be interested in your response to this sort of shortcut to success mentality within the culinary world nowadays, with reality shows and even cooking school. So many chefs coming up thinking if they plunk down a certain amount of money, then when they're done, they open a restaurant. So how is that experiencing the pace, the feel, the running of the kitchens nowadays?
So the attention of media as an overall is good for the industry. The culinary schools as an overall are good for the industry. They prepare cooks to become cooks in our kitchens. But it's true that reality shows with those competitions that are not necessarily about the quality of the food, but more about creating drama and so on, and the school making believe that at the end of your two-year program, you're going to be the greatest chef in America, are misleading a lot of people who want to come in our industry. And a lot of the young audience has the tendency to believe that they can become a celebrity in a very fast manner. They forget that cooking is about cooking. It's not about being a celebrity. And when you enter a kitchen, it's very humbling as an experience. You do not You are not a celebrity in a kitchen. It doesn't exist. You part of the team. You work. It's craftsmanship. It's artistry, but it's not about glamour. It's nothing. The kitchen is never glamorous.
I always make this, I respect anybody who does it. That's why I write about it and don't step foot.
But I always make this analogy. I always say, look, if you are an actor and you come in the industry because you want to be winning an Oscar, and your obsession is to become famous and be on In Touch magazine and with your Oscar in your arms, well, it will never happen to you because you are in the industry for the wrong reason. It's about becoming famous and rich, and you forget about acting. You have to have the love for acting exactly the way we have the love for cooking, and Aldo for testing and serving wine and the entire process. If we don't have that passion, we will not be successful. Now, being successful is all subjective, obviously, and relative. But you will get rewards when you will do your work properly and when you will have the true passion for your work. It's a consequence of that. You don't work for the reward. The reward comes, you celebrate when it's time to celebrate, and then you go back to work.
Well, Aldo, I'm wondering how you've experienced this in your corner of the industry, too, because the documentary, Psalm, which is very big right now and almost gave me a heart attack watching it, has turned a lot of people's attention to the Master of Sommelier exam, which, you know, I know that you didn't or haven't gone from that, although you have been rewarded in so many other ways. So do you think it is important to have a piece of paper or a pin to prove your medal, or do you fully espouse, and I would imagine you do, taking the old-fashioned method of, you know, on-the-job training and rising through the ranks?
That's a loaded question. I've been interviewed for quite some time about that that movie. I know all of them who were in that movie. Look, my training was very, very similar with different angles. Look, I'm turning soon 44. I'm long enough in this industry. I think you can study wine quick, but you have to have experience. I know you have anchor points, tasted many, many wines, and I've been many times in wine areas to connect all your knowledge also and basically put that down into the dining room, because you can have not a lot of knowledge but not be good on the customer. To me, it's always important to be in the dining room, to be on the customer. That's the biggest criticism what many master sommeliers have. They become master sommeliers and then they work for a wine supplier, which is not a bad thing. But as a sommelier, we work on the floor. As a sommelier, we work with the customer and with the wine. And to me, look, my accolades came because I never left the sandbox, basically. My sandbox just, you know, became larger and larger because I just loved wine and I followed that passion, followed that love. And you can ask people, look, my personal opinion, ego is your worst enemy. As soon as you think you're at the moment you're the best, you're already on decline. And you're just waiting until you get it. That's not a good thing, and you don't do yourself a big favor. Humility never killed anybody, a smile didn't kill anybody, and to me, look, you have to work with the team. I'm only as good as my team is.
So considering you both have really reached the highest heights in your respective careers, what is, humility goes a long way, as you said, but what keeps you striving, searching to become better, reaching for a brass ring day after day after day?
Have you been in love?
Oh, I have been married for 11 years,
see,
very much so.
I'm in love with wine.
It's about passion.
Yeah.
When you have the passion, when you have the fire, it's easy. You know, you just make sure that you always feed the fire. And there's many ways to feed the fire. It's by traveling, interacting with people, learning and being open to learn new techniques and new ingredients. It's a great lifestyle. We don't have a job. It's a lifestyle. It's a passion. We live for our passion, and we live, and we're very lucky, we live from our passion. And at the end of the day, I never feel that I am at work. I'm just living my life. This is my life. And every day I try to do better than yesterday. And I try to share that with the team, and the team seems to be very receptive, and they follow obviously our vision, and the leaders like Aldo in the wine department and in the kitchen and in the dining room, and everybody's very motivated in the restaurant. And I think we have created this kind of energy where creativity, passion, interaction is really the fire that motivates us to ultimately, and with a lot of humility, serve the client. The client do not come to the Bernardin to see a peacock in a dining room. The client comes to the Bernardin to have their time, to have a special experience, and it's very important to understand that we are here to create this experience with a lot of humility, with a lot of psychology too, understanding what the client is looking for. Some clients are very much, for instance, in love and don't want too much interaction with the waiters or don't care about seeing the chef. Some people come here because they are celebrating, and some people come here because they are foodies and they save money to come here and to have this experience. Some other people come here as a business deal, and so on. So we have to read the client, the clientele, and then we're here to deliver that special experience that everybody's seeking, but everybody has in mind a different experience.
Well, this is just part of why you are, again, counted amongst one of the 50 best restaurants in the world. Quite incredible. Are there, can we expect or look for any upcoming collaborations between you two, individual projects? Eric, you're famously something I've always admired about you, is you're certainly, you've never looked to just slap your name on a million and one project. It's been mostly Le Bernardin, a few things, you know, other places, and then the wine bar. So I know putting your name on something is something you take quite seriously. But is there anything coming up in the future for either of you?
Yeah, the summer menu.
I love that. That is a beautiful answer.
But it looked like it's not a big deal, but it is a big deal, because Aldo has to work with me on the wine pairings and so on. We have to create the dishes for the summer. And four times a year, or sometimes even more, we really, really put a lot of effort into creativity to come up with our new collection of dishes, exactly like designers or like musicians who come with a new album. It takes a lot of energy. It takes all your knowledge, all your passion. And it's a big deal. And when I say the summer menu, it's a lot of work. And I am not interested to put my name on 20 restaurants, neither 10, neither 5, neither 4, 3 or 2. I'm very happy with what we have. Aldo Somme Wine Bar doesn't require anything from me, except obviously interacting with Aldo and making sure that the team does a good job to complement the vision of Aldo. And that's where we are today. Now, if we can open some more wine bars, maybe that could happen. But so far, we have been focusing on the Aldo Somme Wine Bar and Le Bernardin.
Well, I would imagine the wine bar is still your baby. But are you working on any other wines? I mean, you've got a lot of stuff going on, Aldo.
You spoke about mentors, you know. To me, I'm considering myself as very, very lucky, and not saying this because he's sitting next to me. I learned a lot from Eric in terms of... I reached a certain level, which I'm very, very fortunate about, but you have to be smart about that. and be very, very thoughtful about that. So, look, I have a collaboration, I think you referred to that, with Zalto, with the glassware company, which is right now certainly absolutely the top. And I consulted him on that before we went into that. Mm-hmm. I make also wine. Also for that reason, because as a sommelier, I realized, you know, what I'm doing actually makes no sense because I criticize only. And that's the most simple thing to do. You don't need to know anything to criticize. So, and I saw also very quickly that this is actually painful. And you have to think a lot. And it helped me a lot to become a better sommelier. In a sense that I understand wines better. And have better networks also with winemakers. And that's basically it. My plate is enough. And I learned from Eric a lot. Be very, very smart about that. And the next partner is Miguel Lecros, you know, in that sense. I'm just amazed to work with her. I mean, I don't always like her because she's hard and she's tough and she's pushing us. And the office has to be always spotless clean. That's hard, right? We have to run quickly into the dining room. But the consistency she puts up on every day is just shocking.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have to say, I think it might just be the pinnacle of my career to have had the opportunity to sit down and speak with the two of you. It's absolutely, there's nobody I respect more, and I get giddy over very few celebrities, food and non, and this is the tippy top. So thank you guys so much for sitting down with me in your very cool conference room, filled top to bottom with cookbooks. And guys, thank you so much. You have been listening to a very special edition of Taste Talks on the Heritage Radio Network. And we are back. So as far as listicles go, you would be hard-pressed to find one with greater gravitas than the world's 50 best restaurants list, which has been dominated since its inception in 2002 by luminaries like El Bulli, French Laundry, Noma, The Fat Duck, and this year, as in 2013, oh, I'm going to mangle the name with my horrible accent, El Celler de Can Roca in Spain. Oh, please forgive
beautiful.
Me. No. And while it is yet to nab the top spot, Le Bernardin is a series regular on the list, coasting to a cozy number 18 this year. So now, obviously, we can't visit El Bulli, sadly, as it's since closed.
Indeed.
I have been to Per Se, not French Laundry, although I've been assured that they're pretty much the same. And Per Se actually beat French Laundry on the list this year, so I'm okay about that. Given the opportunity, we would all be totally on board for dinner at Noma El Celler de Can Roca. Oh my God, please help me.
Let's be real. I would eat at any of them. There's not a clunker on the list.
Okay, but listen, what else amongst the current 50 would you put on your own personal dining bucket list? Don't make me say El Celler de Can
Roca. I won't make you say
Roca.
See, I chose easy ones like White Rabbit in Moscow.
That's why you want to go, because
exactly.
You just want to say
like,
White
that's
Rabbit.
Something I can really say easily.
I already mangled the Italian in our last show. I might as well spread the
All dialects will be explored here by Sarah on the show at some point or another. varying degrees of difficulty. I got excited by this. This is a newcomer on the list, number 23, in fact. It's this really sort of fascinating Alice in Wonderland decor that... see, now my turn to possibly butcher a Russian
name. I'm with you.
Vladimir Mukin. Okay. I apologize if I'm saying that incorrectly, but this really, he's doing sort of a modern take on Russian cuisine, which I think is something that, I mean, at least in my travels in the world, is not something that I've experienced quite often. So I'm excited to see sort of what that means for him. I understand there's a great borscht thing that he's doing that's very exciting. But the decor of this place is literally Alice in Wonderland. I mean, White Rabbit, obviously, down the rabbit hole. It's over the top. It's beautiful. It's Russian. I need to go. I need to go now.
I live near Sheepshead Bay, Brighton Beach in Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. And if those restaurants are any indication, I would be all over White Rabbit. I actually am going to dig myself into a dialect hole here, because I have to say, I feel like I should just book a plane ticket to Spain and start crossing restaurants off the list, because more than it seems, I didn't actually count, but it seems like more than New York City, more than France, the country that is most represented on the 50 list this year is Spain. In addition to grabbing the top spot, there's Muguritz in San Sebastian, Matthew Leitner, who moved to New York City, got his start over there. But there's Asador Extabari, Azurmendi, there's Tickets in Barcelona. The
The one that is really, I think, on the tippy-tippy top of my list came in at number 17 this year, right in front of Le Bernardin. It's Artzak in San Sebastian. The chef, Elena Artzak, was voted, deemed the number one female chef in the world. I think it was in 2012.
Is she the only female chef on the list this year, or am I mistaken?
I'm
going to have to go back and look again. But that's
it's possible.
First of all, we need more women represented.
That goes
on this
without
list,
saying.
Generally speaking, but oh my God, yeah. To visit Spain and to visit even just one of these incredible restaurants would be, I mean, sort of bucket list type thing we were talking about earlier. I mean, I don't think I'll make it to all 50, but Spain definitely representing very well on the list this year.
Well, watch out, New York, because Spain is definitely where it's at. That is our show for today. I want to thank our incredible guests, Eric Repair and Aldo Sohm, for giving me the thrill of a lifetime by essentially inviting me into their home, and my frequent banter buddy, Nell Casey of Gothamist, for always being so fun to talk to. You do not need me to tell you to visit Le Bernardin, but you should, as well as Aldo Sohm Wine Bar right across the street, for a meal that will live forever in your memory. Or if you just want to waste a few minutes, you should follow Nell Casey at Nell Casey, or me at Sarah Zorn BK, or of course Taste Talks at Taste Talks. And please do subscribe to our show feed at either iTunes or Stitcher. Au revoir, and until next time, you have been listening to Taste Talks on the Heritage Radio Network.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.